The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of The Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey friends, welcome once again to Afternoons with Mike. I'm so glad that you are along with us today. I'm very happy that Dave Zanotti is along with us as well. He's on the line. Dave, from where are you speaking today?
Hi, Mike. Talking to you from our Mid-South office in Nashville, Tennessee today.
Music City. Such a lovely, yes. a lovely area. One of my favorite places. I know you like music, but do you like country music?
Mike, I like all kinds of music. There's not a kind of music other than the discordant non-music of the radical left. Other than that, I like music, period.
That's a great answer, because I hear all different styles of music on the public square. Yeah, I don't know who chooses that, if that's you or if you've given them a playlist, but some of it is kind of almost on the side of being eclectic from a style side. I mean, it doesn't really fit one of the most popular genres. And then you bring out some of the greatest tunes, and I just love it. So, yeah, it's an intriguing beginning to the show every time.
Well, that's Alan C. Duncan, who is a great gift to us as our executive producer. It's a great story on Alan's life and his walk in faith and as a scholar and as an artist. So I first met Alan C. Duncan when he was a rapper. That was the first performance I ever saw of his work. And he happens to be the son of a pastor and his wife that are friends of ours and been friends of our ministry. So we got to know each other when Alan was just out of college. And he has become, I think, one of the best executive producers of a radio broadcast anywhere in the country. And Alan, like me, loves the widest palette of God's gifts through music. And what we always look for is the harmony. That's what we always look for. Melody tells us that we have God's gifts. Harmony tells us that we're to use them together and that we're always better in harmony than we are alone. And I happen to think that music is one of the great confessions of the reality of the Creator in the created order of the universe. So we take music really seriously. That's why we're here this week finishing up production for the 10th anniversary episode of Christmas in America, which will be premiering in the next couple of weeks all over the country and then hopefully on a YouTube special as well.
Now, that's always a great program. And I have to tell you that I love listening to you on a daily basis. It's just such a good way to kind of get everything straightened out in my mind about things that are important. Yesterday, you had Dr. Chuck on. I think he's going to be with you again on today's program. His perspective on the whole thing of vaccines, that was pretty amazing. Very helpful.
he's such a gift. We call the Public Square Discovery Radio because we do not have all the answers. What we're looking for is the right questions and then to share what we learn with everybody that's willing to listen.
Mm. Well, he certainly is knowledgeable and honestly brought a lot of peace in my own mind to all of the work that's been going on this vaccine that's been produced by these companies. And just
well, I think that
go ahead.
Go ahead, Mike.
No, I started to say, I think the general thought has been the fear of how rushed we've gone into this vaccine for the coronavirus, that whether or not we could have confidence in its efficacy. But according to Dr. Chuck, that is a pretty solid thing. Made me feel better.
Well, the other things that we're learning is that, first off, there was research being done in the coronavirus field before COVID hit. So this was not a situation where the research companies were caught blind with an absolute startup. In addition to that, because of the technological advances that we have today that we didn't have 100 years ago or 52 years ago when we were facing the Hong Kong flu and that pandemic across the country in 1968, because of the incredible discoveries that we've made in regards to cellular technology, this virus is actually going to have a silver lining in that the research that's being done and the vaccines that are being created are going to give us additional scientific benefits for other areas of disease control and prevention and cures.
Hmm. Well, that was a very comforting thought. And I wonder what he would say. Maybe you know, but what would he say to those that would feel that, along with the necessary components of a vaccine, that the developers might be putting into this vaccine, things like tracing elements, that kind of a thing. Does he ever address anything like that?
Well, I have not spoken with him about that directly, so I can't speak for his mind. What our research has indicated is that that would be something very difficult to do in a corner with this much observation and the tremendous liability that would be involved with something being done dishonestly for other purposes. That's very difficult to buy into. Now, it's plausible, but it's very difficult to see in reality. And one of the things I'm concerned about is that people who are often chasing the threads of a plausible but most unlikely conspiracy are often missing the conspiracies that are in plain sight. That's the one that concerns me.
That's well said. And there's no secret about some of these things that, you know, are being done. And it's not even in the law, much less the Constitution. It's not even in current laws that are on the books that have been passed in years where we've been alive. And yet those things are just somehow. And of course, we know the complicit news media is right there overlooking, turning the other way. And that just boggles my mind that all of these kinds of things can be happening right here, right in front of us, right in front of our very noses.
Well, let's take a look at one that's currently in the news and at the top of almost everyone's mind. What happened in the 2020 election? Now, this happened in plain sight. Back in March, a couple of governors decided that they could single-handedly and outside the rule of law change the dates and times of their state elections, their primaries. That is patently unconstitutional. It is completely illegal. And they got away with it.
They got away with it then. And it begs the question, why and how?
Well, and the next thing that happened was it sent a signal across the nation to state lawmakers and to courts that COVID was a serious enough threat to justify radically changing the way we would conduct elections. So the scars of the fear created by false models and false understandings of what this virus really is and what it really means ended up putting us into an electoral crisis that lawmakers solved by creating vast new opportunities for mail-in voting. So that what we ended up doing is from about May to October, establishing rules that would create an outflow an inflow of new voting by mail, which would be two times as great as anything we had ever seen before. But those same governors, lawmakers, and courts did not provide for the personnel, for the funding, or for the time allotment to process all those ballots, therefore creating an unintentional chaos that turned the 2020 election cycle upside down to the point now where no one knows for sure where exactly some of the votes came from, how exactly they were counted. The chaos is so powerful that we cannot know before it's time to seat a president, so we will, based on the best guess possible, and the net result is that our system of trust in our public government is diminished dramatically because politicians ignored in plain sight the law, broke the law in the name of a crisis, and then we were off to the races.
So, Dave, then I have to ask this question. If this happened and we can see how the role of the coronavirus really impacted and changed the whole direction of this vote, as you said. Going forward, do you think that there would be enough a belief that it was wrong, that what happened? Do you think there's any call to action to kind of shore that mistake up for the future? Or are we looking at our constitutional republic looking more and more like a banana republic in the future?
Well, this depends, Mike, solely on whether or not Americans can come to their senses, whether we can pull ourselves off of our affections and disaffections with the presidential election and accept the fact that the rule of law is more important than any race, any election, any single person, anyone in any campaign, that the rule of law is more important than my opinion, the rule of law is more important than my narrative. The rule of law is what gives us the ability to exercise a platform of freedom and liberty. And when I say it's more important than any race, I don't mean race as in human construct. I mean race as in political race. There is no political race that is more important than the rule of law. Now, our politicians clearly cast that to the wind. That was the conspiracy in plain sight. And in so doing, they created the chaos that was exploited by people in some very tactically brilliant ways to alter the outcome of this election. Now, whether it was done fair and square or not will take years to know for certain, but it was done. And we have to live with that, and we have to ask ourselves, what do we do now? Which is your question. What do we do now? That comes down to the deeper question, which is, when will Americans rediscover again that public service is love of neighbor, and that public service as love of neighbor is part of what Jesus is speaking about when he says that we should love God with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love our neighbor as we love ourselves? When we accept the call to public service as a part of our discipleship in Christ and treat our civil government with the care that the framers and founders treated it with, that after our responsibility to God and to our families, that the preservation of civil liberty through the rule of law is without a doubt the third most important reality, even before our private enterprise, it is more important. The rules by how we live are more important than how we play the game. Until we come back to that understanding, until that responsibility takes over our pulpits and our small groups and our radio programs and our music and our publications and our missions mindset, until we understand that America will expire on our watch unless we change and take public service more important than hobbies, public service more important than careers, public service, until we rediscover that, we're cooked, Mike. If we don't change, we're cooked. Power abhors a vacuum. And people with narratives and agendas to deconstruct America who don't want to be America anymore are on the rise. They represent at least a third of our country and are able to manipulate the balance of votes that they need to get to 51% in a national election. Unless people of faith who want to still be Americans change their patterns of public service, this country's finished.
When you say finished, it's a scary thought. You know, often you hear America's government being referred to in terms as the great American experiment or the great constitutional experiment. And I've heard that most all my life because, and I think it's reasonable why it's been referred to that, because it was so uniquely done. The framers who put together our Constitution. I knowing I'm going to talk with you today, I woke up this morning early and had all of these thoughts in my mind about our Constitution. You know, the Constitution of the United States, how unique a document it was. But what's so amazing about it, it was written so long ago and yet was so wise that it is really applicable today, to this very day, all of these years later. It's still a working document that brings order if it is followed. But where we see it is not followed, we have what you referred to earlier as chaos. And that chaos is seemingly well entrenched in America today.
Well, it's not that something can't be overcome, but you can't beat something with nothing. And this is our problem. We're great at having cable news shows and commentary programs where people critique what's wrong, but don't show people what to do. And we cannot continue to criticize and create problems without acknowledging there are solutions. Now, let me hold myself to the same criticism. What do I mean by public service? What I mean is, first off, take care of your own family and your own household. You're not fit for public service if your home is a wreck, if your marriage is on the edge. We must take care of the first principles of self-government, which means moms and dads, be committed husbands and wives. Take care of our children. Take the first primary responsibility to educate our children and to care for our families, not from the government. First order of business, self-government. Then find a network of people who care. And if there isn't a network of people who care, then you're the network. That's all there is to it. If there's one of you, you and God are a majority. And if there's five of you, that's five more than one. This country was founded by 56 people who signed a document of absolute commitment, laying down their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. And God saw that confession of the Declaration of Independence, and he honored their prayers. It cost them everything to do it. It won't cost us everything to return this country, but we are so sadly addicted to our lifestyles that it'll feel expensive. It won't be compared to the price that's been paid. It'll just feel that way for a while. So what's the next step? Go to a city council meeting. Find out who your member of city council is. Look online and discover who your state rep and state senator are. And write them a note introducing yourself. Go visit their home offices. They're right nearby you. And say, I'm a constituent. I just wanted to say hello. I wanted to know you and let you know that I'm praying for you. Create a group of people that are willing to take on your state lawmakers and your member of Congress as their mission field. Write them birthday notes, those elected officials. Happy birthday. I hope you're doing well. Praying for you, praying for your family. No, I'm not saying stalk them. I'm saying pray for them. Pray for them like they are as important as every other missionary photo on your refrigerator. Put your elected officials there. And then pray that God will raise up new leaders in your city council, in your state rep office, in your state senate office, in your congressional office. This is how we change things from the bottom up. It is a lifestyle change. Nobody wants to hear it. We've been preaching it for 41 years. People hate us because we won't change our tune. It is the only way out of this. We have to dig liberty back out from the dirt by the merciful grace of God. There is no other way, or else we will lose it. If you like lockdowns and the government telling you when you can go to work, how much money you can make, and what you'll do with it, just keep doing nothing, because they'll be happy to lock you down the rest of your life and take everything you've got, and you'll be a battery in their matrix. They don't care.
Wow. You know, Dave, there's an old saying that I've heard years ago, and I live by this. If we keep doing what we've been doing, we're going to have a whole lot more of what we already got.
You know, in the you couldn't be more right, Mike. Jesus teaches, render to Caesar the things that are Caesar, and to God the things that are God's. We misunderstand that verse radically. We think that Jesus was saying the world is divided between sacred and secular. That would be blasphemy. The Holy Scriptures teach that the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the people and all who dwell in it. And Jesus is the living Word of God. He would never contradict the teachings of the Scripture. In America, we the people are Caesar. We have been handed the right to create and the ultimate authority for our constitutional form of government. If we do nothing, somebody else will do something, and you can't beat something with nothing.
Dave Zanotti is my guest. Dave is the president and host of the program put out by the American Policy Roundtable. It's called The Public Square. You can hear it really several times on our station in Orlando, Gainesville, and Ocala. On all of our stations, it's on at 7 a.m. and at 5 p.m. in Orlando. It is also on in the noon hour at 12:30. I highly, highly, highly recommend that you make this program part of your everyday listening, because it is informative, and right now we need to know the truth, and you guys are doing a wonderful job. We're going to be back with Dave Zanotti coming up in just a moment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike. It is always a privilege to have Dave Zanotti on the program, and he's here with us today. He's up in Nashville, and we are so honored to have his viewpoints, his thoughts, his experience, and his heart as he is sharing some of these things of great importance. That last segment was so very helpful. These are important times.
Well, Mike, I don't want to let people think that it's something that they have to do all alone. We all have to do this in harmony and together. But we have to understand that since the early 80s, the evangelical community in particular has made a grave mistake by thinking that the way to deal with public policy is to incorporate into one political party or the other. Largely white Christians have moved toward the Democrat Party. Largely black Christians have moved, white Christians have moved toward the Republican Party. Black Christians have moved toward the Democrat Party. That is foolishness. The gospel of Jesus Christ is a transformational gospel. When Jesus Christ changes our names, he changes our narratives forever. We are the most forward-looking people born from above to bring God's perspective, to bring salt and light into all political parties, into all of political life, just like every area of life. So we have to understand that this concept of doing something through the political parties is not essential to public service. Anyone who wants to run for city council or state rep can win with or without a party. It's not that complicated. And you say, they're all against me. Actually, that's an advantage. People who run as independents only have to win 34% of the vote to take the race in many states, in most states. It's not a disadvantage. It's an opportunity. Now, if you want to be a member of the Republican Party, that's fine. You want to be a member of the Democrat Party. It doesn't mean anything. It's just paperwork and filings. Those party platforms that they put out, they are dramatic and distinctive, and they mean nothing in the way that parties govern themselves. Don't be fooled by those documents. The political parties exist for power, not for principle. Now, I'm not suggesting that we need a third party. That would be the worst mistake we could make, because the two we got are killing us. What I'm saying is you'll have to put principle over party. If it's to your advantage to get elected, to be a part of a party, that's all fine and good. But be your own person. Stand for your own principles. Why don't we have pro-life Democrats, Republicans, and independents? Isn't the issue of the preservation of life more sacred than a political party? We have to go back to governing based on principle over party always, always. So you don't run for public office thinking that you are subjecting yourself to a political party as your employer. Never. You don't need them to win. You don't need them to run. You don't need millions of dollars to serve in public life. We have to cast all of that bondage out and understand that a person with a serious commitment and a handful of friends can accomplish great things yet in this country if they're willing to start in the simple things, in the humble things, and work their way up. I can attest to the fact that almost everybody knows the name of Jim Jordan in conservative America today. Jim Jordan started as a volunteer in 1992 for the term limits campaign that we were running in Ohio. He stood outside a polling place with an ironing board and petitions on that ironing board as a homeschool dad and a wrestling coach at Ohio State University. He was a volunteer. When he ran for state rep, the party was against him, all of them, and he won. When he ran for state senate, the party was against him, all of them, and they won. When he ran for Congress, the party was against him, all of them, and he won because he worked at the bottom. He did not come with money wealth, or a pedigree. He came with passion and conviction, and he worked harder than everybody else. And I can repeat that story over and over and over again across this country. It still happens. Now, you say, well, I'm not supposed to be a politician. I'm not supposed to run for public office. Great. Give your life in service to those who are called. Be their prayer warriors. Be their financial aid. Be their friend in time of need. Walk neighborhoods for them. Get involved in the process. Now, I know nobody wants to hear this. It's the holiday season coming up. Nobody wants to hear this. Nobody wants to hear anybody say, if you don't like what you got to work to change it. I'm sorry. I'm the whole world's Dutch uncle, and everybody hates me for saying it out loud. But Mike, we've been doing this for 41 years. There is no other answer.
Not unless we're willing to see it go by. Just go bye-bye, out the door. And it is very concerning to think about the fact that we are closer to that as being a possibility than at any time in my lifetime. You know, I was thinking about the craziness of the day that we're living in, and we were talking in segment one about music, and, you know, I often think about songs, and songs kind of help guide my process and certainly brings comfort to me in times where things are difficult. And I had a song this morning that popped in my mind. It's a kind of a modern day hymn. It was sung by George Beverly Shea. It was called In Times Like These. Are you familiar with that song?
In times like these, we need a savior. In times like these, we need an anchor. Be very sure your anchor holds upon the solid rock.
Unbelievable. You just knew it right off the top of your head. And that is exactly where we are. The words that spoke to me right there are be very sure. Be very sure. And I think that's the question that's on that is before all of us right now, Dave, is that are we going to be very sure? Is it possible? I think a lot of people are asking the question, can I be sure that what's going on right now is right? I've said this before. You know, we think back to Pilate's words before Jesus. What is truth? And I think that's a great question right now. We know as believers, we know what is truth. I think from the standpoint of America, that's going to be the question that is going to yet be decided upon before that great and fearful day when the Electoral College finally casts its vote. And I guess the first question that I would have to you, we know that last night the GSA came out and said that they are going to proceed with the transition process. And they have held up, and I think rightfully so, but at great personal expense. By that, I mean they've received threats. The leaders, the people involved in the General Services Administration, which would be granted the authority to do this transition and to guide the steps, they have been under personal attack. And that's the thing that just shocks me about that. When we look at one bright difference between conservatives and the extreme left, when you see a decision go against the extreme left, you see violence, you see riots, and yet this has happened against conservatives. It should be noted that there have not been this kind of outcome in our country. They have not had to report about conservatives burning down buildings. And that lawlessness that we were talking about seems to be weighted, Dave, on one side. And I just think it's important for us to realize that these people have been threatened. They've been personally threatened. So the president authorized the GSA to go ahead and move with his blessing, and with that, with the caveat that the lawsuits are still going on and that he's still not going to concede. So my next question to you is, what do you think about that process? What do you believe can come from this whole process of basically running up the flag to the upper courts and saying that there was fraud that happened on that night?
Well, two questions in that question, Mike. The first is the lawlessness is sometimes obvious in the street, and sometimes it's what we call trickle-down lawlessness. I'm going to tell you flat out that Jerry Demings in Orange County has been practicing trickle-down lawlessness in his lockdown policies for the better part of a year now. He does not have the constitutional authority to do what he's doing. He's abusing the law in the name of a health crisis to make life very difficult for people in Central Florida. We saw the same thing by a Republican governor in the state of Ohio, in Mike DeWine, who has been the king of lockdowns. He was the governor who started all of this electoral chaos by being the one who canceled the first election and then became a part of the whole mail-in ballot scenario with all the laws changing. See, lawlessness can happen from any political party, and it can trickle down. When people see that governors don't honor election laws, then they don't honor election laws. When people see that governors create edicts, not laws, and deny legislative process and due process, then they start to do the same thing. City councils start to say how many people you can have in your house. Mayors authorize their police department to go in and arrest people for not wearing masks in their own homes. Trickle-down lawlessness always follows. It's a dangerous reality. So sometimes you see it blatantly on the street, and sometimes you see it, but it's behind the scenes. It's the same lawlessness. Okay, that's one thing to understand, and it respects no political party or ideological side. Okay, so we've got to be careful. This is really hard stuff to look ourselves in the mirror and ask the honest questions. Now, the next question that you're asking is, where is the ultimate resolution for what just happened in 2020? The ultimate resolution comes from first an honest confession that we did this to ourselves. We let governors and legislatures pass laws and courts make rulings that would create a massive new form of mail-in ballots. Now, it's not that that's an idea in and of itself that is abhorrent or should be rejected. It's simply that it was done without due process. It was done without smart process. It was done without appropriations for time and money and employees to handle it. And it created, intentionally or unintentionally, chaos. That chaos will take months to sort out in regards to ballot counts. For example, Allegheny County, Pennsylvania started in January of this year acknowledging that they had 140,000 names on their ballot rolls that did not belong there in January of 2020. By the time we got to the election of 2020, they didn't have more than half of those names purged. So at least 70,000 names sat on their voter rolls with the potential of someone exploiting them by requesting a mail-in ballot and utilizing it. And we're not certain the system could have caught it on the way in, let alone caught it in the count. See, there wasn't enough time to make these changes and get them all processed. So we did a really stupid thing. In the midst of a crisis, we made a second massive change. That's like, don't ever make a really big decision when you're sick or you're tired or you're broke or you're angry. Don't change election in the midst of a pandemic. Really stupid idea. And we did that. We did that to ourselves. Forget Donald Trump. Forget Joe Biden. We did this stupid thing to ourselves. There are governor's races, Senate races, state rep races. There are races all down the ballots where people still don't know, did I win? Did I lose? I'm not sure. You know, these things, what's the real count? And we're not going to know, Mike, for probably 2 years, until such time as prosecution creates witnesses that are willing to talk, or somebody has a stroke of conscience and decides to talk, or somebody gets paid from one side or the other to talk. But until people inside the system tell us what really happened, we're not going to know.
Hmm. Now, on that, with these ballots that were cast either through the mail-in process, or then there was this other part of this change that was done apparently without legal or authority to do the change, and that would be the extension of when ballots could be dropped off or when they could be counted, or and then this odd thing that happened. And this opens up, you talked earlier about something happening right before our eyes on election night when we started getting the word that some of these counties, some of these states were going to suspend counting the ballots until the next day. That just is so open to fraud. That is so open to all sorts of things. And again, it seems that was rather unprecedented. So
that's true, Mike.
So what happens with all of that? Could any of those things be deemed by some higher court, even if it is all the way to the Supreme Court? Could some of those decisions that were made, maybe even going back to the issue of mail-in ballots that were not cast legally, do you think there's any chance that any of that could be made right in this cycle?
No, there's just simply not enough time. This is the overwhelming chaos. You have broken glass everywhere. It is chaos, and it is going to take time to figure it out. But we will eventually. The truth will come out about all of this. Eventually, people always talk. Look, we all know now, and it's been written about over and over again, that the election of 1960 was stolen by John F. Kennedy's dad, that he stole it in Cook County, that he handed out enough walking around money to make sure that he couldn't lose Illinois, and that's how he won the election. Everybody knows that now. Nobody knew it then. Richard Nixon had a strong enough inkling and said, yep, they stole it, but there's no way for me to fix it or prove it without tearing the country apart. And so Nixon accepted the defeat and moved on. But the truth did come out. Now, we may find that people on both sides of this 2020 election exploited the system. I don't care where the facts lead. We just want to get to the end of the trail. But we're not going to get there. And if we stop searching for the end of that trail just because the election's decided, then that turns the election into a freak show. That would be a disaster. We must find out what happened and what we did to ourselves, but let's not kid ourselves. This began with the chaos created by Republicans and Democrats, lawmakers and governors, who changed election rules without responsibly governing the public policy and the outcomes of that decision. We did this to ourselves. Now, I say that without affection or disaffection. It's just the facts. Now, we don't like it. We were all busy protecting ourselves in the midst of a disaster that was created largely by the politicians as well, and by trying to figure out which end was up and who was lying to us and who wasn't. But that was, you see, this is this goes back to way, way, way back in February. I had a group of business leaders ask me the same question. They said, how long can we give these governors? Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Let's say to them, okay, you need to flatten the curve. Could we accept a 2-week lockdown to give them what they want? Could we do that? And they asked me, what, from a policy perspective and a historic perspective, what is your best advice? I said, you cannot give them 1 second of your rights. You cannot give them 1 moment of opportunity to violate constitutional authority and law. You can give them nothing or they will take everything. That is what history teaches. And we're still in lockdowns today.
Yes, we are. And it would even look like very possible that we're going to be in greater senses of lockdown. Some states already doing it. I saw a shocking night before last, a shocking headline from one state that the governor of that state was basically encouraging neighbors to call the police on their neighbors if they saw more people in the house for Thanksgiving than there should be, according to these unlawful edicts that are going down and saying that you can't meet in your own home with your own family, only, what, 4 people or whatever. And this is like Orwellian in terms of the Big Brother looking down upon us, isn't it?
Mike, we've talked about this for 41 years, and people kind of treated us with a certain degree of good humor. Not everybody. We've had a lot of folks who've been wonderful, faithful allies and have struggled. We have struggled through this together to this point. And there's no joy. There is no joy in explaining to people, now you see the matrix is real. A civil government built upon progressive ideals of the administrative state treats human beings like batteries in the system. They will drain you of everything. They only give you what you ask for to the degree that it keeps you in line. This is the administrative state. This is the godless equation in power. This is what happens when we forsake the Declaration and the Constitution and the principles upon which they stand, or we simply mouth those words as critics but don't get involved in the arena and fight the fight together. This is reality.
My guest today is Dave Zanotti from the Public Square. He's the president of the American Policy Roundtable, 41 years of serving this great nation with just these types of issues of public policy and being a voice. I love the fact that you are an originalist. You are one that would go back and hold things to the thumb down, hold it to the fire. This is not right. Being a voice, sometimes it feels like a voice in the wilderness. But you're doing it, and you've been doing it, and we're grateful. We'll be back with one more segment with Dave Zanotti in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike on The Shepherd. On the line with me today, Dave Zanotti. Dave, I can't wait for the time that you're going to be back down in Orlando and to get together face-to-face, but I'll take this line-to-line, studio-to-studio. This is a wonderful thing that you're doing for the residents of Florida across the Shepherd Radio Network. Mark Radio so appreciates having you be a part of our network, and you're on again at 7 a.m. and at 5 p.m. across the network. I highly recommend everyone to listen to this program daily here in Orlando. You can also catch it in the lunch hour at 12:30. We've talked a lot about things that might not be able to be changeable in the election cycle that we've just, I'd like to say that we've just come through. We're really not completely through it yet, but it might be decided in what you're saying already yet. But there's one aspect, one caveat of the 2020 election that still remains due to a very important both Senate seats. And it's so unusual that this would happen the way it did. But one Senate seat was up for re-election and the other is being a special election due to the fact that someone had resigned, left their post. Kelly Loeffler had stepped in. Now we have both Georgia Senate seats that are up in this one cycle. And as it turns out, with the numbers being what they are, this is going to basically be the election that determines the majority of the Senate, which way it will go. And from a constitutional standpoint, from a conservative standpoint, there couldn't be a more important Senate race than this runoff election on January 5th. Is that right?
Well, we're getting much closer to the truth now, Mike, because Article 1 of our Constitution is Article 1 for a reason. The legislature, the legislative branch, makes the laws and has the most power in our system. We do not have three co-equal branches of government. That's not what the founders built, nor what they taught. The vortex of power, according to the Federalist Papers, is the Congress, and who controls the Senate has a huge amount of power right now. So I'm not excited that either party is going to be capable to handle that power, but I do know that if the new administration has the House, the Senate, and the White House all in one area of control, that we will see a tremendous amount of mischief in our country. The last time that happened was when Barack Obama was elected and they chose to do Obamacare, which for 2 years was their singular focus. They passed the law. They opened the project. They failed on day one after spending hundreds of millions of dollars. They couldn't get the first website to function. And then shortly after that, because of the passage of Obamacare, the United States Senate balance changed. And a Democrat seat in Massachusetts, formerly held by the late Senator Kennedy, flipped over to a Republican seat because people were so outraged by the absurdity of what they witnessed with single party control in the Democrat control back in the first Obama administration. That could very well be a repeat. We could see very similar kinds of situations here. So, yes, there are two pivotal seats that right now are happening in Georgia. What can people do? One, you pray for Georgia. Pray for the people of Georgia. Two, lots of people in Florida know lots of people in Georgia. Write them. Send them an email. Call them, text them, ask them what you can do to help. Make sure. Now, the same process that we had in Georgia for this last election with mail-in ballots is happening again. It would be a big mistake for people to wait and say, well, I'm going to show up on election day, because that doesn't work. In this case, you've only got two races, so they can count the ballots. Everybody in Georgia needs to vote now and get on with it. Get a ballot, get voted, get done, and everyone needs to participate. Now, if the people of Georgia, in a fair fight, choose the two Democrat candidates, then that's the end of the game in regards to Republican control of any branch of the government. And there's another election that's coming, and that next election will involve an open seat election in the state of Pennsylvania in 2 years for a Senate seat. Pat Toomey's already announced his resignation, his retirement. So within an hour, we'll be talking about Pennsylvania in 2 years. No matter who wins, that will be the conversation. The point being, you can never escape the responsibilities of a living republic. We always have to have the next election on our refrigerator as part of what we do. It doesn't have to be 100% of what we do. That's my job, okay? I get that. But it needs to be a greater percentage of what we all do, or else we're not going to get the outcomes we want. So we've got to tune this system up. So pray for Georgia. Talk to people in Georgia. If there are candidates there that you believe in, support them. Get involved wherever the fight is and do what you can do. Don't lament what you can't.
You know, something, it's not exactly scrubbed from the internet, but I had to find it very, I had to work hard at it, let's say, to find the quote from then, she's the Speaker Nancy Pelosi talking about Obamacare back in the time. Everyone knows the quote, but it's hard to find. But I finally did find it, where it says, let's vote it in and then see what's inside the bill.
And we have to pass the law to find out what's in it.
Yeah, we have to pass the law to see what's in it. That has to go down. Can you think of another more absurd statement that's ever been made in law or by
the perfect word? The perfect word, you used it, is absurd. By the time Nancy Pelosi made that statement, our team had read Obamacare twice. We had watched every hearing. But at this stage in the game, our legislative directors read it 10 times. We had members of Congress calling her to ask her what was in the law.
Yeah.
And to this day, Barack Obama has never acknowledged that he has read the law that bears his name, nor has Joe Biden. That is absurd, and that is dangerous. But see, Obamacare was passed to fail to catapult us into a nationalized healthcare system. That journey is still underway, and that's something we have to be very careful of in this new administration.
That's so true, and that would be my point that I'd like to lead to, is to say that this happened in 2008, and here we are 12 years later, and almost 13 years later, and finding ourselves still fighting over that decision over 12 years ago and paying, and we all know it's untold, like you said, hundreds of millions of dollars, if not now into the billions. It's crazy to think about what that one thing did, and that was an example of something done where it was all in the House of one side of the party, all of them. Democrats held the Senate, House and the presidency. And unless this Georgia race is somehow upset, it's going to end up being 50-50 if the Democrats win the Georgia race. And then, of course, that would be giving the tiebreaker to Kamala Harris as the president of the Senate, one of the roles of the vice president of the United States. So that would lean at 51-50 in favor of the Democrats, and they would be right back to where we were in 2008. So it's going to be interesting to see what kind of debacle, expense-wise, that America could be looking at. And then we've talked about this a couple of times, all of the executive orders that President Trump put in are probably going to be reversed within a short order. Wouldn't you agree?
What's interesting, Mike, about the Obamacare question that you bring up is that the purpose of Obamacare was to catapult us into a nationalized healthcare system, as we stated. The irony is, at the same time, you have people returning back to old-fashioned insurance concepts. Now, they don't call them insurance companies because they weren't insurance companies in the beginning. We call this the shoebox principle. We wrote a brief little publication called They Just Can't Do It, talking about the fact the federal government cannot be America's insurance company, never could be. But now, while you've got all these people continuing now to say we need a single-payer system, we have these groups that are out there that are health sharing services that have come back up with the old school principle of nonprofit shared expenses that are rising up. Millions of people now have memberships in these groups, and they're going along spending far less money and taking care of one another far more efficiently than is happening through traditional insurance. So on one hand, you have this quiet revolution that's going on that's working wonderfully well for people. And then you still have the administrative state demanding to take control over everything. And why do they want the control? Because they would control another 7% of the nation's economy. And that keeps their elite system rolling. This is the battle that we're into. It has nothing to do with Republicans and Democrats. It has to do with how are we going to live and take care of one another going forward. So I know that didn't answer your question specifically, but this is what's at stake in these Senate seats. This is what's at stake in a legislative fight. You see, what's ironic is when Obamacare passed, a room was left in the laws for these small private enterprises to continue to go forward, and they have prospered dramatically. My fear is that if, in fact, the Democrats take control of the Senate, they'll wipe those groups out as well.
Wow. Well, these are times, in times like these, we need a savior. In times like these, we need an anchor. And I'm grateful, Dave, that in times like these, we have you to help us sort through, to help us know how to pray. And taking words from you today, in many cases, we need to start acting. We need to act upon what we know is right. We need to get involved where we can. We need to do that list of things that you've given. That's really great advice. And my friend, I thank you for being with me today on the program. And we continue to pray. We want to look through all of this, as you always do, through the eyes of a biblical worldview and say, God, what would you have us to do? And we wish you and your family, Dave, a very happy Thanksgiving.
A most blessed Thanksgiving to you and all the great people, Mike, at Mark Communications and all the stations. And thank you for the opportunity to talk to your listeners again today. Thank you.
It's wonderful. Dave Zanotti from the Public Square. And friends, thanks for being with me. We'll catch you next time right here on Afternoons with Mike.